Hello, everyone, and welcome to Laughing Place Podcast. So I just got something to say. We've recorded like three podcasts that have not aired because we have been trying to work on our technology to improve our sound, and they all sounded a lot worse. So we kind of back to the old school. Hopefully this can't get screwed up because, as you know, we have very low standards. But I just apologize for the break. We did. I'm just going to start off saying we did record a bold prediction show that we'll never hear the light of day. Never hear the light of day. Never see the light of day. So we're just going to run through them at the end of the show, so that you know. Doobie was here, guest starred, went at great expense, and then it just didn't happen. So that being said, we're going to kind of hope this one goes. We have a lot of people actually want to guest star on the show. We just wanted to make sure we could get through a show without it being an issue. So we're going to try again, and we'll go from there. So anyway, welcome. My name is Fanboy. We've got Kyle,
Hello.
and we've got Alex.
Hello again.
And we're in this, I just kind of want to take a step back. We're in this weird phase. So we're recording this on February 6th. So Kyle, you have pressure to get this in a reasonable amount of time. As of today, we know that the Fox transaction will not close before February 26th. We also.
Now, why do we know that? You said that, but I don't know why we know that.
Okay. So basically, Disney has to buy or convert Fox debt to Disney debt. And there's a process for that, and that's supposed to happen in concert with the finalization of the transaction. And they've updated sort of the extension date of the end of the transaction, so we know, they've been extending it. Originally, it was like, December, and then it kind of kept getting moved forward, back. Some days, just one day at a time. So there's some development which shows whether it's something that you get from a regulator or whatnot that says you're not gonna we're not gonna be able to close before this date, and then they say, okay, it's now February 15th, it's now February 26th.
Gotcha.
They did say, it would be done by June. It's expected to be done by June. They did say they hope to that'll be meaningly before that. I think March is probably what we're looking at now. I would have said end of January at some point or early February, but seems to be pushing back. That's getting into some stuff that's pretty in the weeds of,
I would have thought it was, I mean, specifically on the 26th, is they just lowered prices for, well, they lowered the basic tier of Hulu while increasing the live TV one. And that doesn't go into effect until February 26th. They announced it about a month before that. So I figured because of that runway that they gave themselves, that that would kind of give us an idea of what they were looking at, but.
Yeah, it's you would think, but it seems to be that that's not
It might have been what they were
I
hoping
that
for, but.
yeah, and I think, I mean, they want to get it done as soon as possible. The because they're in this weird flux stage where, the people at Fox aren't really, they're not working hard, because they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know where they're going to work. They don't know if they're going to be at New Fox, a full Fox, or what have you. So, there's just it's at the point where they just need to get it closed, because by the very nature of it being announced, there's stuff that's not happening. People want to know, they want some certainty. I bet you they're not, deals, people who are looking for a deal, especially since Disney sort of can't say what their plan is for Fox to any great degree until they have an official deal in place, then it just sort of causes a whole lot of nothing to happen. And the more that nothing happens, the it just sort of causes delays and decision making and in everything. And that's why we're kind of in this weird phase right now where we are,
Holding pattern.
yeah, and not just on Fox, because also the direct to consumer Disney Plus is supposedly going to have, well, not supposedly, I mean, it will be at this Investor Day in
April 11th.
April 11th, which coincides with Star Wars Celebration. Probably not a coincidence. And so because of that, they're not talking about the Disney Plus in any meaningful way. I mean, we're getting reports of new, shows that may or may not be on it. Obviously, production's still happening, but we're not getting anything meaningful.
On that, if you don't mind me segueing for a
No.
second, were you at all surprised by the news that one of the shows that they're producing is actually licensed through CBS?
Well, so here's, I don't know, did you hear that Bob talked about that?
Yeah, and
Is
he's
that,
pretty much said he was willing to look outside of Disney, which.
does it support, well, I mean, part of the thing is that they wanted to buy production capacity. So that's why they bought Fox. I mean, essentially, they're buying Fox to feed Disney Plus and Hulu. But so, if you have a project that, if they're just looking to build out originals as out of business, then yeah, especially if it's something that can turnkey pretty quickly and they think is a quality product. I mean, ABC does it. People might have thought they were just going to do it their own. I don't think you're going to see a lot of it. I don't think half the shows are going to be outside productions. But particularly for the Disney part of Disney Plus, I wouldn't be surprised if they go outside, a certain percentage of the time. What I don't know is, really the rollout strategy. Is it going to be all at once? Are they going to do are they going to do different ones? Like Hulu sometimes does episodes all at once, and sometimes they just dump a whole season. Are they going to try and when it launches, how much original content's going to be already there, and how much are they going to just try and fill out as time goes on to keep people subscribed? I mean, these are not the important issues of our time, but they're curious questions to me. Is there's no right, just, a lot of people presume it's going to be just like Netflix, which is probably a fallacy because they're the big player in the game. People just presume that. And, that might not be the case. So, what it ends up being, and that's what we're waiting for April for. And, it probably means it's going to be a fairly boring shareholder meeting because they're not going to talk about the stuff we really want to know. The only exception might be parks, because that's the only division that's not really changing, except they changed their name today. But what the movie studio's in flux, TV's in major flux. I mean, the whole executive team is changing, and streaming is they want to wait for this April 11th date, and I get it. They want their song and dance. It makes it difficult for us to cover because when we're not institutional investors, but also Star Wars Celebration's happening at the exact same time. So Kyle, I don't know what your plan is, but we're going to have to figure that out. And it's they've done these investor days before. Sometimes they're bigger deals, sometimes they're smaller deals. I know they did a huge one when in the Save Disney era. They did another one sort of as Bob Iger was trying to give out his strategy. They did one for ESPN when they were trying to show how ESPN is handling the changes to their business. So they're not unheard of,
Didn't the last one
but
actually like coincide with, was it with the Fox announcement, or was it
so
something
what they
else?
did was so they what they did was it wasn't an investor day per se. What they did was they invited some investors to see Star Wars, which was coming out that day. And so then they ended up having to, they ended up hosting a Q&A session sort of tied to that since they were all there anyway. And according to Bob, if you believe him, it was sort of coincidental. But because they can't, these investor days are these investor relations is regulated. You can't just be an institutional investor and get a tip from Bob Iger because that's not fair to you and me who doesn't get that information. So whenever they have those sort of, not saying they can't say hi, but if they're going to go through the company strategy with an institutional investor, they have to, and possibly say something that's not public, they have to webcast it. So they ended up having to webcast basically these guys' dinner where they did a small Q&A about the Fox deal. Now, of course, the Fox deal, a lot of it, actually, I gotta say, you would think that they would say a lot of nothing, but they did say some important things, such as Fox Searchlight was gonna stay, National Geographic was gonna be a part of it. Some of those questions that if you're in Bob Iger's head, you kind of make sense. But if one thing in our job is you realize a lot of people don't pay as much attention to what Bob says on a daily basis as we do,
Or completely
because
misread it sometimes, purposely.
yeah, right. So we understand Bob's thinking while we're obviously not thinking know everything in his head. We know what his vision is for this, which might not be as obvious to someone who's not who has to follow more than just one company. But so these investor days, this is going to be the coming out party. I mean, we're going to get trailers probably. We're going to get a glimpse, or they're going to get a glimpse of what Disney Plus looks like. Presumably, they will also take it as the coming out party of Disney Plus to consumers. But it's going to be an exciting day. The challenge is that we have these events coming up. If you're looking at it from an investor calendar, or say a Disney business calendar, you have a couple things happening. You're going to have the purchase of Fox, and it's just inherently by when that deal closes, we're going to know, people are going to have to know who they work for. So therefore, we're going to get at least some idea of what their vision is. Now, we're probably not going to get the complete song and dance that you're going to get later, but there'll be some news out of that. Who's staying, who's going, we have some of that already, but maybe we'll have a better idea of what their rollout strategy is. It's also the date that, Kevin Feige can start playing with, the X-Men and, some of the other sort of creative stops will be released. Number two, and then we got the shareholder meeting March 7th, presuming that happens after the Fox deal closes, which may be the most, I mean, I just knowing Bob, they might announce something, but it's going to be, they're not going to talk in depth about Disney Plus. It might be a very short meeting because he's going to want to keep his unveiling for April 11th. And he's wanted to have this Disney Plus Investor Day forever, but he wanted to wait. Literally, it was supposed to be about a year ago, but they wanted to wait until that was further along. But it's going to be a weird couple months at Disney. I mean, it's a weird day when Laughing Places posts more non-Disney stories than Disney stories.
Yeah, like FX Day we had.
Yeah.
I have two questions for you. One, I'm pretty sure I know the answer. The other, I'm not quite sure. In terms of the metrics with what we heard from ESPN Plus, saying they reached 2 million already paid subscribers, does that give you more hope or less hope for Disney Plus? And then, as an actual ESPN Plus user, does that user experience give you more or less hope for Disney Plus?
Well, so the first question is what gives me hope about it is not so much the 2 million users, it's the fact that they were able to sign up about 600,000 people in one day. To me, that shows a couple things. One is they're able to do it. Two, they were able to prepare for it, Disney is famous for having disasters at launches, right? I mean, D23. Some of my Disney experience, they just haven't worked right at the start, and I think Bob knew that, and I think that's why Bob bought BAMTech. So they're able. I don't know how many people are going to sign up for Disney Plus the moment it becomes available, but it shows me that the process it gives me hope on the technical side. The number of users, I mean, if you think about a quarter of those are UFC folks. I mean, and I just mean, I don't know how true that is. I mean, what does that tell me about Disney Plus? Nothing. It just tells me that it's a completely different market. I was lucky in that I was an insider. So when they announced ESPN Plus, they before that for years they had ESPN Insider, which I had been a member of and dropped it. But I was like, well, this is what they have as a direct-to-consumer offering currently, and it's $39 a year. So I'm going to sign up for it because I want to see how they integrate ESPN Plus and ESPN Insider. So I sign up for ESPN Insider. It comes with an ESPN the magazine, and then I sign up for ESPN Plus. Well, come a few moments later, ESPN Plus, they integrate ESPN Plus and ESPN Insider, and they extend my subscription, and I am now grandfathered into $39 a year instead of the typical annual price for ESPN at $49 a year, plus I get the magazine. So I kind of lucked out. I get more for less. But what that made me think about was, what could they combine a Disney Plus membership or anything like that with on the Disney side? Could a D23 membership come with ESPN Plus? Could an annual pass Disney come Plus? With ESPN? I'm sorry, Disney Plus. You know, it's an easy way to sort of, you know, no one's going to notice if their AP increases $50 to include Disney Plus. But it's an easy way to get, particularly at Disneyland, you know, a substantial amount of people in buzzworthy LA to get the service for, quote, free when, and, you know, kind of prime the pump a little bit. You know, I don't know if you remember, but annual passes used to come with a subscription to Disney Magazine. So, you know, it was just an excuse for them to supplement the magazine. So I don't know. I mean, that being said, I am pleased with the ESPN Plus experience. The streams work well. I don't have any major technical issues. I don't love the placement of some, you know, sometimes I find it's hard to find something.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I've only used it a few times and I think that the streams are fine, but I keep having issues where I'll log in and it'll still be showing me in like the main slider, like a 7-day free trial thing. And, you know, I'll try to click on something I want to watch and it wants me to like log into my cable provider, or, you know, I usually want to watch the latest 30 for 30 and it doesn't feel like it's very, very well placed. And it's kind of annoying to navigate. Well, but I know it'll be a bit different situation with Disney Plus because it's not being built into an existing website.
Well, I don't watch ESPN Plus on the website. I watch it on
desktop, so that's why.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, if you go to ESPN Plus as a website, it takes you to a sign-in page, regardless of if you are, you know, a member or not. It doesn't know. You sort of have to go through ESPN.com to kind of get to ESPN Plus, the homepage, which is weird. But there's a couple things. One is I feel that ESPN Plus is trying to move away from some of their original content. I feel like they're focusing on live events plus 30 for 30. And I also feel, which is sort of when they announced it, you know, there's all these original series and there still are there, but they're kind of they've made them a lot harder to find. I think it's because there's few people like me who are like, I want to see everything ESPN Plus has to offer. And more people who are like, I'm a soccer fan. What's on ESPN, regardless of if it's plus or not. And so there's been a noticeable transition in that. And I thought it was interesting how ESPN Plus debuted with a new 30 for 30 and they had last day of night. And then they had another one about Junior Seau. But then it seems like now they're moving the 30 for 30 premieres to ESPN Linear and just ESPN Plus will be the archive of it, the Netflix of it.
And having to watch it with commercials still for some reason.
Yeah, and I think that's like if you watch it within, you know, the C3 window of an airing, that's where that comes through. Basically, but that's a whole other story. But there's one big difference between ESPN Plus and Disney Plus, where ESPN Plus is designed to stream live events. Disney Plus is just streaming movies. And, you know, those are two different animals. I mean, I'm not a technical guy, but it's a huge, you know, ESPN Plus has to deal with, it's the end of the game, it's the start of the game, it's halftime, there's commercials. Whereas Disney Plus won't have commercials, it won't have, you know, start times, unless they incorporate a live stream element, like live streaming the parade or whatnot. But, I mean, even if they do that, that's not going to be a huge driver for them. So it's a whole other game. I mean, there are bumps in the ESPN Plus product, but if you compare it to every other technical product Disney has ever launched, including Disney Now, which is the streaming service for Disney Channel, it is leaps and bounds what you would expect. I mean, I think it's even better than Hulu as an experience. And I wonder if they're going to move Hulu's to sort of a Disney's, a BAMTech-powered distribution method. But I'm excited for Disney Plus just because it's more Disney, right? And, everyone always complains about Disney Channel doesn't have Disney stuff anymore. Well, this will have that in addition to Disney Channel stuff. So, a documentary series about Imagineering, a documentary series about Ink and Paint. I mean, that's what I'm excited about, just more Disney. And I hope Disney fans, I hope Disney fans get Disney Plus. I hope they should. I hope they want to because it's a good service. But I also hope that they support the stuff that they say they always wanted. Because they're going to count, they're going to see how many people stream a particular show or movie. And not so much necessarily in library content, but in originals, watch what you like. Watch what you want more of, because that's how they're going to decide where to invest in the future. They're going to throw it when they start. They're going to throw a whole lot up on the wall, just like ESPN Plus did. And they're going to see nobody watches a certain thing, and they're going to move away from that and onto the stuff that catches fire. Any other Disney Plus questions?
Kind of. I was just thinking. So I was watching the Super Bowl because I was in charge of putting up all the Disney trailers that premiered. So I had to actually watch.
And you did a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you. But they kept talking about how they at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, how they have fan-friendly pricing for their concessions, and how it's actually been really beneficial to them. And because Disney's kind of taking this, both with ESPN Plus and Disney Plus, and also lowering the price of Hulu now. I understand that Bob said it's more because, hey, we're not going to have as much content as Netflix, so it doesn't make sense to price it the same as Netflix. But if they're trying to learn, like, hey, let's grow our numbers by lowering the price, it makes me wonder if they'd ever try something like that, at least in some capacity, in the parks as far as concessions. Not with ticket prices, because those need to control demand. But I wonder if they'd find better per capita.
Well, what's interesting is I worked at Disneyland when they did lower food prices. For that idea was that, hey, this bottle of water is cost too much. So they lowered prices and they held them for some time. The next increase kind of increased it to where it was. So I'd say it's probably about, you got 4 years of value there. But what's interesting on, I'm going to say no, but because that's where the growth can come from. They don't want more people to go to the park. They also don't particularly want to become incredibly unaffordable. So you're going to, they always break out. It's through guest spending and then versus ticket pricing. And, there's especially now, currently there's sort of there's more demand than capacity, particularly at Disneyland. But even, Pandora still gets in January crazy waits. So, unless you want ticket prices to go crazy, you're only going to grow your business through food and beverage and merchandise costs. And, because of the current state of the economy, I'm not going to get into macroeconomics, but all goods cost more. Groceries cost more now than they used to. Regular shirts cost more now than they used to. So we're not in a position where Disney is going to be able to negotiate lower costs for themselves. So I don't know that they're going to pass that on to the consumer.
Well, I'm not thinking across the board. It'd be interesting if they offered, just made a point to offer certain things that they were pointing out as like an especially good value, to steal the phrase that they used to have on the tram, talk about no passes.
Well, but there's certain items, particularly like trendy items, that they will adjust pricing down if the trend is over, they do lower prices occasionally. It doesn't get a lot of press, not so much on food, but they do lower prices on merchandise if they feel that it's not selling at the price point it has, just like they raise prices if, it sells like hotcakes at the price they have.
Well, it's also interesting because Disney, compared to other entertainment complexes, is so lenient about outside food or drink that it almost does make me wonder, like, if they were just a little bit lower, or there were some items that you're like, oh, well, this place has a good deal that you didn't have to, you know, like we can all point to certain items and be like, oh, this is actually a pretty good value. But if they're explicitly calling it out, like they had like a family four pack or something like that, that if those people that are packing their sandwiches for Disney World wouldn't then be like, okay, well, we can spend that much. That's in our budget.
I just don't know that the people packing their sandwiches. I think there's a perception that Disney is always going to have high prices, regardless of if they actually have high prices. Not, I mean, the AP might figure it out, but I think a lot of people will always go, oh, Disney pricing. I mean, you hear that as a term. Those are Disney prices. Even, if
Well,
you go to
people
the
say that
ball
about
game.
stadiums too. That's
Yeah, and stadiums are more expensive than Disney. I mean, it's not unreasonable to pay. Whatever, $3.75 for a Coke. I mean, quite frankly, at my at it's almost $3 where, in my cafeteria at work. So I don't know. I mean, I know they've tried it. Will they, if there's a downturn, they absolutely will try it again and do it again just to move product. But you'll probably see it more from a discounting standpoint, I think they'd be more inclined to do it that way. Raise the AP discount to 25% or something like that. Just so it's focusing on the people that, might be more prone to notice it's a deal. I mean they have increased the dis I mean the AP discount's what, 20% now? It used to
I
be,
don't know.
yeah, it used to be 10% at Disneyland and zero at Disney World. Now I think it's up to 20, so at
Well,
least for
Disney
certain
World's still
APs.
pretty stingy. I feel like I never know where to get my discount. And oh, actually, I do. I know that if I want to buy a bottle of water, I need to go to a merch location instead of
Yeah,
a.
well, that's the thing is, yeah, carts. It's funny because carts used to not have a discount just because they didn't have register. Like they only had cash and they didn't want to start pulling out all the pennies. But that's sort of not an issue now when everyone pays by a card. But that was like the reasoning. However, it's still been like, no, we're a cart.
Well, even food location, even like, I don't know. I feel like if at food and beverage locations, you don't get the discount. But if you go to an actual like merch booth, a merch store that happens to sell bottled drinks, then you get your
Yeah.
discount.
And if you do it in Osceola County, it's different than if you do it in Orange County.
Oh, isn't orange cheaper?
I think so. But Alex, you got anything to say?
I'm the Hulu friend. I haven't used ESPN Plus much. I'm excited for Disney Plus, but I'm hoping Hulu gets a whole new interface. It is so clunky if you're trying to browse like more movies than just what they present under the specified genres they're highlighting at the moment. Like you really have to know what's there and search for that to find it, which is a terrible interface. I've hated Hulu's current like watch list interface pretty much since it started. So
No,
I'm
it's interesting.
really
Is
hoping.
I think they will. I think Bob hates it too, because you keep hearing him talk about like, yeah, changing the Hulu interface or, I mean, I don't. Obviously, Disney doesn't control Hulu yet. So, and there's, even when they do control Hulu, they still have to pay attention to another. Someone who owns. People who own 40% of it. Otherwise, I like overall the ESPN Plus interface. I can search by sport. I can search by, what's coming up. It wouldn't fit Hulu per se, but like I feel like, and I love the MLB.TV interface, which is the same people. So I think having BAMTech power Hulu would probably make sense business-wise, just from a sharing cost standpoint, but also I think would be a step up for Hulu. But I also don't like Netflix interface.
Yeah, I agree. Is any of this powered by Key Chest?
Well, that falls under Kevin Mayer now, the Disney, sorry, Movies Anywhere. I have a question. So, do you have Netflix, Kyle? Has Netflix, whenever you get like an alert saying we recommend for you, has that ever been anything you would have any vague interest in watching?
Yes, sometimes. Usually if it's specifically like we found this comedy special for you, and it actually says that in the title.
Oh, I don't get those. I just get suggested for fanboy, Sex Education, which I found amusing, but or some like horror movie or something. I was just I've never had anything. But then like there's a new season of a show I've already watched, but I don't get alerted about that.
Yeah, I will say it's not great. Like, you're right. Most of the time it's just, oh, you just clearly want to promote this. And I think I've gotten alerted to some of the shows I've watched before. But yeah, no, every once in a while they'll tell me about a comedy special that I'm actually like, okay, yeah, I'm on board.
The one thing that I feel is weird. I mean, I don't know if you watch CNBC, Kyle, after, or
Not
kind of
regularly.
during. No, but I mean, like in the last 24 hours, they're all like talking about Disney competing with Netflix. But what I don't under like is that a competition? Like, how many people in the world are going to be like, you got to pick one, Disney Plus or Netflix? I think people will drop Netflix if they don't feel like they're getting what they want out of Netflix. I feel like people will drop Disney if they don't feel like they're getting what they want at Disney, and if they're getting what they want out of both, I mean, not saying, $20 isn't $20, but if Disney is $8, $7 a month, is that gonna change a lot of people's signups because they have Netflix already?
Well, my whole thing with Netflix is, to me, my personal value in Netflix, the amount of Netflix that I actually watch for my subscription, has gone down significantly over the years. And it's really because they keep switching away from acquiring content that I would have been naturally interested in and producing their own. And sometimes their own content, fits into what I'm interested in. But more often than not, it's stuff that really has nothing to do with my taste. And I would be of the mindset, I think, in the future, especially once Disney Plus is available, pending, how robust it is and how much content there actually is to watch, where I would maybe not keep my Netflix renewal on and let it, lapse a couple months where I don't have it, and then as they've built up a couple of shows or things that I want to see, maybe sign up for a month and then drop it again. I have a feeling that's the way future me is going to deal with Netflix. Hulu is my TV provider, so I think I will always be consistent with Hulu, regardless of if Disney's majority owner or not. But Netflix is really the one subscription right now that I could live without. I would cancel Netflix before I'd even cancel like Apple Music.
Well, it's interesting in that, I mean, obviously I have them because I want to know the products so we can report on them. But I will, based on what has been announced of Disney Plus, I will watch almost everything on Disney Plus. I
Well, I
maybe
mean,
watch 1% of Netflix.
they've canceled all the Marvel shows.
Right.
Kimmy Schmidt is ending. I'm trying to think. I mean, their version of the Fyre documentary, I've watched both now, and they're very different, but the Netflix documentary feels like the tone is that they knew all along that they were defrauding people. The Hulu documentary makes it seem like it was really a mix of being too optimistic and then not backtracking when they realized they couldn't pull the event off. And that seems a lot more realistic than these, Ja Rule and this 20-something guy were just out to scam people.
Especially since they, I mean, they must have seen, they were actually sent the people there. If you're just going to take their money, don't
Right.
issue the plane ticket.
So I mean, there were things in the Netflix documentary that Hulu left out, and there were things in the Hulu documentary that Netflix left out, but Netflix's narrative really seemed like these guys were out to get people. And the Hulu documentary made it seem like they had the best of intentions and then just really didn't have the skills or the know-how to pull off such an event. And
But
I preferred the Netflix version, and it's basically two competing rivals making the exact same content and doing it their own way. And the
how
Netflix version
many
was so much better.
shows do, how many shows or movies do you need to have from a streaming service? Let's say they're both, Netflix just raised their prices, but let's say they're both $10.
Well, I'm in a weird category because I don't get to watch a ton of TV for personal pleasure. Just with my real job schedule and my Laughing Place schedule, most of the TV that I sit down to watch is for review purposes. What excites me about Disney Plus is that, and scares me, is that it's all stuff I'll be watching for review purposes, which usually the Disney content gets me hooked. Not all the FX stuff, but the Disney stuff I'm usually pretty gung-ho about.
Well, I mean, as a Disney fan, I mean, you have Lady and the Tramp and, some other movies that maybe not Disney branded. I mean, Disney, you know, I would say, you know, not
I'm
reboots
excited
or things,
for those.
but...
I'm excited for the ones that aren't like Disney specific because they feel like a return to form.
Right,
they
and I'm not like... saying I'm not trying to discredit them. I'm just saying is they might not get a Disney fan as excited to sign up to start. They might love it when they watch it. And I love that Disney will have an avenue for those kinds of movies as the box office just doesn't really support them anymore.
It gets me very excited because I miss that type of film. You know, things like Blank Check, you know, that is now highly revered amongst kids from the 90s. It's not a great film, but, you know, the Disney will be producing films in that vein again for Disney Plus.
Well, we're all gonna want to see the... you know, the documentary about Imagineering. We're all going to want to see the Ink and Paint thing. Mm-hmm. You know, assuming we're all, when I say Disney fans, we're also Marvel and Star Wars fans, which there is huge overlap. You know, we're all going to want to see the Loki series. We're all going to want to see the Mandalorian. You know, maybe we don't all need to see the Clone Wars or, you know, there's some other stuff on there, but we're going to be watching a lot of Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it almost makes net as a Disney fan, not saying the general public, but as a Disney fan, it almost makes it feel like, why am I paying more for Netflix for that one series or two series or one movie?
It's pretty much just going to be Grace and Frankie left.
Well, I mean, and that's us. I mean, that might be, you know, that might be you, but, you know, I mean, and they're canceling Fuller House, which is another show I watched on there.
Right.
Which is not good, but it's, you know,
it's nostalgic. Right.
Yeah. And so
that's why you watch.
And they've been more on a canceling bend, and they also, because they try and be everything to everybody, they spend a lot of money on stuff that I have no interest in. I mean, I like watching Stranger Things, but am I going to pay $100 for
things? No, it's the kind of things, because they launch all the episodes at once, even if it's important to you, you could re-sign up for Netflix for that month, watch Stranger Things, and then cancel your subscription again. Like, as far as I'm aware, Netflix doesn't have any parameters against, like, repeatedly signing up and canceling.
They used to make it easier. I don't know if... I know they make it harder now, but I don't know if they actually ban it.
How do they make it hard?
Well, they used to have, like, just, like, a switch. Like, you should just be able to log
right,
in and toggle it on and off.
I remember pausing my Netflix once.
Yeah.
And having no issue.
Well, see, I'm actually in the process of switching to T-Mobile, so my Netflix is going to be free. So, problem solved.
Yeah, well, if it's free.
For now, until they merge with Sprint, and then who knows.
Well, and then I have a question. So, like, do we think that they're going to bundle?
Bob Iger say anything? I thought he
Sorry, that's not what I meant. Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu at some point will probably be bundled at a discount. But what about I want to pay $50 and get 12 streaming services? Like, you know, cable.
You mean the thing that everyone's been railing against all these years?
Yeah,
talking
but,
about how they
but
unbundle?
I'm saying is, like, I mean, let's say Netflix is $12. But let's say I go as a bundler and say, I'll give you $8. And then, you know, then you go to Disney Plus and say, instead of charging $7, we'll charge you $5. But you're going to get... you know, all of my subscribers. So you make it up in volume. Like, I mean, does that just not seem like an inevitability?
I don't know if it's an inevitability. I think, I don't know. It would have to make the right... There have been some that aren't directly competing that have done that, like Hulu and Spotify, I think it is. I know they started with like a student bundle and then now they offer one for anyone.
Well, and essentially T-Mobile's doing it. I mean, you know, Netflix isn't giving it to T-Mobile for free. And I know AT&T offers, like, a certain limited TV package with their service.
Right, and I think
maybe it's
Sprint
not...
has Hulu, and then I think someone else has something else. Verizon has Apple Music. Yeah, they all kind of did one at a time. But as far as, like, I don't know, are you thinking, like, individual services teaming up? Or I could imagine more of, like, a third-party service trying to bring them all together, almost kind of like Disney Movies Anywhere did.
Right. I'm thinking like AT&T, let's say, or who, you know, your internet cable provider. It says, you know, yeah, you know what? You can get your phone will cost you $50, but for $70, you get Phone Plus, which includes this other stuff.
Phone Plus.
You know, whatever. Yeah, because they're already essentially doing that to a point. I mean, you know, T-Mobile's using Netflix. Netflix gets something from T-Mobile to give them access, right? And, you know, presumably it's not the full Netflix cost, but then they get that times however many T-Mobile subscribers there are. So it makes sense for Netflix.
So you can cancel your Netflix very easily by clicking account, and then in the upper left it says cancel, and then you just click finish canceling, and it gives you a disclaimer. First of all, when you cancel, you keep it until the end of your billing cycle, and then it says come back anytime. If you restart within 10 months, your profiles, favorites, viewing preferences, and account details will be waiting for you. So basically, as long as you do a month of Netflix and don't let more than 10 months go by in between, you will also save all of your account data. So from what I'm seeing, it would be very easy to just keep picking up and dropping Netflix as needed throughout the year. But like, I have a feeling I will always have something I want to watch on Disney Plus.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and I wonder how much my Netflix viewing will be impacted by Disney Plus.
Well, my Netflix
viewing is only so
many
hours in the day.
Right, my Netflix viewing is already like when there's Kimmy Schmidt's and Grace and Frankie's, and so it's gonna go down even further. And I mean, some
but
of their original,
I mean,
do
even
have
then,
some movies in development that I'm curious for. But again, you can kind of batch them unless they're all like must see events. You kind of until there's a couple that you want, and then for $10 for the month, you watch them.
My want to watch list is always a lot longer than have time to watch list.
Right.
And it doesn't go chronologically. So I think the stuff on Disney Plus, you know, particularly the high profile stuff, will always be ahead of anything, I would say anything, but most things that I want to watch on Netflix. I'm behind. I watch Grace and Frankie and Fuller House and quite frankly, a lot of everything I watch on Netflix, but I'm behind because there's Disney stuff I want to watch. And nothing, you know, it's never going to make it to the top of my queue. And if it's never going to make it to the top of my queue, then, and I don't mean Netflix queue, I mean my personal queue.
Yeah, none of it's Big City Green's good.
Right. None of it is. Did you see that?
I've never sat down to watch a full episode of Big City Greens, but whenever you watch it and that girl's voice, it just gets me. And she usually has some really brilliant quote. And Fozzie Bear is going to be on.
Yeah, guest starring
Fozzie Bear in his first voice.
But not as Fozzie Bear.
No, Fozzie Bear as another character. It's going to be good.
Yeah, whoever can explain that one to me.
Whoops. I just hope he sounds more like Fozzie Bear than Kermit sounded like Kermit rapping.
Yeah, what was that? Did you watch that, Kyle?
Yes, I had to. I didn't notice anything wrong with it, honestly.
Kermit's voice was like 2 octaves lower. Hmm. Like, he had all the
well, it was a new guy. He's relatively new still.
Yeah, but, like, last time I heard him, he still was like, hi-ho. And this was like, hi-ho. Kermit the Frog here. Like, it was just too low.
Maybe he was trying something out.
Maybe. I think he was
Maybe it was constant.
That's what my leading theory was that
isn't the new voice of Kermit the Frog the voice of Constantine?
Yeah,
so
I have a question, a tangent for Alex, because I know he's more up on these things. I mentioned briefly Disney Movies Anywhere, which is just Movies Anywhere, but with Ultraviolet closing, are you clear on whether if you've already synced to Movies Anywhere, if it'll still stay?
So here's what my Ultraviolet account was only ever, I think Vudu is the only like operator that they ever connected to. I could be wrong on that, but Vudu is the only one my Ultraviolet was connected to. And what's fun is that anything that went from my Ultraviolet to Vudu is in Movies Anywhere. I can't imagine they will get removed now that they're in.
It did say something about like syncing retailers, and I'm like, well, this isn't exactly a retailer, but.
Yeah, but from my perspective, so I'll just throw out a Fox film as an example. When Ultraviolet first came out, if you signed up, they had 5 movies for free or something like that. It was similar to the Movies Anywhere launch promo. And one of them was Fox's Something About Mary, which I have not seen in like a decade or more. But that is in my Movies Anywhere account, and it got there through Vudu and it got to Vudu from Ultraviolet. So my assumption is when Ultraviolet closes down, something about Mary will still be in my Movies Anywhere account and all other synced profiles. That seems like it would be hard to undo. I did have a situation once where I bought State Fair, the 1940s Fox Rodgers and Hammerstein musical film on Amazon, and what synced into Movies Anywhere was the original non-musical version starring Will Rogers, also Fox. And so contacted Movies Anywhere customer support, and they fixed it. And when they fixed it, that Will Rogers version of State Fair disappeared from my library and all synced accounts. And then it was just the appropriate version that I'd actually purchased there. But I assume they manually made that happen. I doubt that there's any kind of a sweep. And then the other thing is Ultraviolet is kind of a weird breed in that I think Lionsgate and Paramount participated in Ultraviolet, but have never participated in Movies Anywhere. My hope is that they both get on board with Movies Anywhere, and then I think it'll be the first such service to have pretty much every major studio involved.
Yeah, my assumption would be is if you bought, you know, if you had it in Ultraviolet and synced it to Vudu, then your Vudu is synced to Movies Anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think you're okay.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a lot of work for them to try and figure out what came from Ultraviolet originally and undo that.
I also know that there's any reason to do it, because you still
there
own
really
Vudu.
Right.
And the whole point of Movies Anywhere is to have everything you own in one retailer owned someplace else.
Yeah. So from my like legal jargon, I would say it came to Movies Anywhere from Vudu, which is an online retailer. Movies Anywhere shouldn't know or care how I got it, as long as it wasn't illegal, which it wasn't.
Well, I do have, like, when I go to my movies, you know, because Movies Anywhere would constantly do those, like, sync up with a new person and you get this for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always end up with this movie and I'm like, why did I buy this? And I realize, oh, yeah, it's probably, like, a freebie.
Yeah, like, I have the most recent Bourne Identity film. I've never seen any of them.
You know, and we talked a lot about streaming, movies, anywhere. But, you know, just taking a step back, with what's going on at the parks, maybe we should just sort of highlight that. Disneyland is getting their ears on. None of us have been. But they have that new Sometimes Fireworks show, you know, dance party.
And we're going to see Sometimes Fireworks on Saturday.
Lunar New Year's happening at DCA, Year of the Pig. So, you know, nothing too exciting, but obviously they're focused on Galaxy's Edge, which is imminent. Meanwhile, at Disney World, they have a whole lot of nothing. The Magic Kingdom has changed their street party once again to actually, I think what's the best version of the street party?
Absolutely.
So they get your ears on street party, or the move it, shake it, mouse it, dance it street yep. party.
With the added entertainment value of Clarabel Cow on top of one of the four floats and Clarice dancing in the streets.
Hello, Clarice.
Hello, Clarice.
Epcot as Farts, the Festival of the Arts, which is sort of a weird way that they announced that they're doing a Hercules musical.
That
for like
was
a week in New York.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, I mean, I saw that the announcement came out today, but I didn't get to read the article. Did they put out an official statement?
Well, it's not being produced by Disney.
Well, it's like Freaky. Well, is it the same way that Freaky Friday and Newsies started?
Yeah, I think so, except this is in Central Park, so it's, like, in New York.
Yeah, but these things, I mean, it really depends on the quality of it, because, you know, Disney Theatrical tends to start these things and get kind of the R&D out of the way with someone else, and then kind of swoop in and be like, oh, this one's good, and take it all the way, which is what they did with Newsies. You know, and like Aladdin, you look at the developmental history and how many, I think it was like 9 different iterations of Aladdin before they finally felt like they had it right, which they do, and finally took it to Broadway.
Yeah, the only recent one that they kind of fast-tracked was
Frozen.
Right, which makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, but in my opinion, for its detriment. Like, there's nothing about the Frozen theatrical experience that you don't get out of the Frozen theme park theatrical experience. Like, all of the main beats are there and all of the visually impressive wows are pretty similar. And like they don't dive deeper into the, like it's to me the Frozen Broadway show is one of the most underwhelming things they've done.
What about the Little Mermaid tour?
Well, don't get me started on that. But that was outsourced back out, wasn't it?
I think so, but
Like
they.
they sent it out to somebody else who changed it, and then for whatever reason, Tom Schumacher decided that's the version to license, even though it's just awful.
Where is I going with this? We're talking about. Oh, are we going to New York now? Is this the way
Well,
this works?
I mean, maybe, because, you know, we've always had the benefit, living in California, of La Jolla Playhouse getting whatever,
La
La Jolla, getting whatever Paper Mill
Jolla.
did for a little stint. So we always got to go see Hunchback or Freaky Friday. And Newsies obviously went to Broadway and toured, and we saw it 3 times. So, you know, I'm hoping for more from Hercules, because I love the music. And I think it's a fun show. I think they could do it well. It would be cool to see them do something even on the level of King Kong with it, with like the Titans and those kinds of elements. I think it
What
could
was
be
I
a
going to?
visual
Oh,
presence too.
farts. So
But yeah,
Hollywood Studio
I mean, when we saw the concert at Festival of the Arts, didn't they mention Hercules?
they didn't mention it. They had it as a poster.
That's right. Yeah, it was like in the sizzle reel of posters of Disney theatrical shows, but it was a poster of like the movie's teaser poster, that blue, like a teal blue with like a lighter blue lightning bolt going down the center.
So Studios has their Pixar thing, the Incredibles, it has some sort of name,
What was that
the
thing
Incredibles Dream
called?
Party.
That was weird.
Yeah.
It was also weird to be walking down the former main entrance of Toy Story Mania without the Pixar Place branding, and just have all of that kind of walled in, and then at the wall for Galaxy's Edge have the Incredibles doing a dance party, but not really a meet and greet. The Edna Mode queue for the meet and greet was really cool. That I was impressed with. But other than that, it all just kind of made me sad.
For what it is, I mean, using space that's not being used, it makes, I think, it's something for that park while they wait for, something bigger. I mean, that's what these dance parties are, right? Nothing's happening at Animal Kingdom, so let's do a Lion King dance party. Dance parties are the ultimate sort of quick and dirty fix.
And yet it re wasn't ready on day one.
Yeah, well, and then, so that's what's going on at Disney World. Once again, the company sort of in a holding pattern, as Galaxy's Edge. I mean, Disney World has a little harder because they gotta wait till fall and probably November, based on Christy McCarthy, for Galaxy's Edge. Whereas Disneyland, it's sooner, summer. So Disney World's gonna have to get through a summer with really no major openings, and when Lightning McQueen's Racing Academy is your big draw. You probably have some challenges, but I mean, just that's the way it all came out. I mean, this is a huge year for Disney, right? End of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it. End of the Skywalker saga. Fox streaming, but we just got to get there. Slow. It's a slow Q1. I'm sorry, slow Q2, which is January through March. Q1 calendar year, but I mean, they even said that in the earnings call. They're like, yeah, Q2 is not going to be so great because nothing's happening. But speaking of 2019, let's go through our predictions. But while I get those ready, someone talk about something that isn't that.
I talked about this
Gosh.
on the last episode, but no one's going to hear that. So I'll talk about how we all got to experience the Wreck-It Ralph, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Void experience. And it was my first experience in the Void, and your second, right?
Yes.
So, but I thought it was really cool. It was much, not like I was expecting it to be bad or boring, but I was way more impressed than I thought it would be. And I was also appreciated that, me being a giant wuss, I liked that there was no really startling parts to it. That was something I was a little concerned about. But no, I thought it went by really quickly. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I'm excited. I kind of want to try the Star Wars one now. And other ones, not the horror one, but any other ones that they come out with.
Yeah, I like the Star Wars one was different, well, I guess inherently, but the Star Wars one was, I like them both, but they,
I mean,
it's neat to see how similar and different they are. I mean, it's similar in terms of
they
the
were very different in
experience, but
tone.
execution, it's different.
Yeah, like the Star Wars one, like I guess if you have like anxiety, don't do the Star Wars one, because it was like lots of surprises, opening up a door and suddenly there's a ton of stormtroopers shooting at you, your vest is like zapping. The Wreck-It Ralph one had elements like that, but none of them were forced upon you. You could kind of choose them. So there's one part where you're kind of moving things on a wall, and like if you do them wrong, you get zapped. But you could choose not to do that if you weren't feeling it. But they both had a like shooting element. Star Wars gives you blasters, but in Wreck-It Ralph's, it was these guns that you could swap between shooting pancakes or shooting milkshakes. And that was fun. And it was scented, which I don't remember any scents in the Star Wars one. So that was something that was new for the Ralph Breaks the Internet experience. The Ralph Breaks the Internet experience was definitely cuter and softer and more family friendly. The Star Wars one was a little more intense. And I can't even imagine trying to do a horror one. I would die.
Yeah, and I don't think the Star Wars one was the word I'm looking for. It wasn't scary. It was just, a little bit more, how it was just a little bit more intense. Like, it's not a horror. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. Nothing's. So, prediction. So we this for those of you first time listeners, long time callers, we do break it out between studios, parks, everything else. And then we'll talk about our most anticipated thing for 2019 calendar year. And we'll go through the movies and predict whether they are hits or misses. Make sense to you guys? I'd hope so. You do them. So, studios. I said Disney will launch another movie studio, as in they have Pixar, Marvel, Star Lucasfilm. I'm not talking 20th Century Fox. They will launch another branded studio.
Something that will
Alex.
make R-rated Marvel movies now, it seems.
Alex says they will do a Hollywood Records biopic. Kyle said Dark Phoenix and New Mutants will not be released in theaters, which, based on what we know, may actually be the winner. Doobie predicted that a feature version of The Lottery will be announced. Gideon, and he only predicted in this category, but predicted that they'll do a live-action Robin Hood with animals, so like a Lion King, but 2019 Lion King with Robin Hood. And Rebecca predicted Disney will announce an animated feature with Prince, who is that's geared to girls. So basically, a princess movie starring a prince. At the parks, I predicted Disney will close a land and not Toontown. I wonder why I predicted that. That's stupid. Alex predicted a Titanic experience. Kyle predicted Disney will get the Marvel theme park rights from Universal. Doobie predicted Galaxy's Edge at Walt Disney World will be pushed to the 2020 calendar year. And Rebecca predicted a Galaxy Edge preview event will cost over $2,000.
And I think we should clarify that the Titanic, it would be like a Titanic attraction based off the James Cameron Fox film.
Everything else, Fanboy said Disney will Plus will have over 10 million subscribers. Alex said Fox will launch their own fan club at 15. Kyle said Disney will coordinate Anastasia as an official Disney princess. DB predicted Disney will launch Marvel stores. They may be connected to Disney stores, but they will be their own separate identity. And Rebecca predicted regional entertainment like a Great Wolf Lodge, but will also appeal to the locals. The most anticipated Disney thing for calendar 2019 for me and Alex was Disney Plus. Kyle
Yes.
is Avengers Endgame, and DB was the Skyliner.
And it's close
So
due to
then,
inclement weather.
going on to movies, the first movie is Captain Marvel. We all said fresh hit. Dumbo, Fanboy, that's me, Alex and Kyle said rotten hit. Doobie said fresh hit. Penguins, we all said fresh hit from Disney Nature if it's released. for Avengers Endgame, Fanboy Alex and Kyle said fresh hit. Doobie said rotten hit. Aladdin, I said rotten miss. Alex and Kyle said rotten hit. Doobie said fresh miss. Toy Story 4, I said fresh hit. Alex said rotten miss. And Kyle and Doobie also said fresh hit. The Lion King, we all said fresh hit. Artemis Fowl, Doobie and I said rotten miss. Alex and Kyle said fresh hit. And Frozen 2, I said rotten miss. And everyone else said fresh hit. Episode 9, we all said fresh hit. My most anticipated movie is, it says Infinity, but I presume I mean Endgame. Avengers Endgame for me and Kyle, obviously. Alex said The Lion King. And Doobie said Dumbo. Least anticipated for me is Artemis Fowl. Kyle and Doobie said Aladdin. And Alex said Toy Story 4.
Everything I've seen. Now, I will say the other day, Tim Allen and Tom Hanks both tweeted that they had wrapped their final voice recording session and that they were both very emotional about it and that they strongly feel that this is going to be great. But I know that they sometimes don't use all that. And everything they've thrown at us marketing-wise has turned me off on Toy Story 4. From Forky the Spork to those weird like carnival game stuffed plushies that punch Buzz in the face.
I enjoyed and their even, Twitter feed even, during the game.
I didn't pay any attention to that, but even like Bo Peep's new like I'm an outlaw outfit is weird, and anybody who knows Bo Peep knows that she's part of a lamp. Like, do you guys know that? She's not a doll.
Yeah.
Have any of you noticed? Yeah, she is part of a lamp. So why is she changing her porcelain outfit?
She might have broken away from the lamp and then been repaired.
Like, okay. Yeah, because she is a porcelain lamp. She and the sheep, like, sit in their base on the lamp. She's not a doll, but she gets up and walks off that lamp all the time. And this, it's all so weird. I'm done. This is going to be the worst movie.
I gotta say though, the Toy Story films, when you start applying like questions to them, don't really go very far.
You know, it's the same. It's the same answer as like, where do all the baby cars come from? But I'm just saying, like, I guess I liked where Toy Story 3 wrapped things, and I really didn't want more than just, you know, I liked the Toy Story tunes. Everything about Toy Story 4 is unappealing to me. Why, I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one.
I don't think you are. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say it's my least anticipated of the year, but you're certainly not alone with your concerns.
Yeah, I would say I mean, it just least anticipated is a big, you know, you gotta pick one, but
I will say I know I have to see Toy Story 4. Like, I will be obligated to see it for work, but had this been any other studio, I would probably not go see Toy Story 4 in theaters.
I would just like to point out that you came across as very whiny.
Oh, I'm not mean to.
Oh, I gotta go see Toy Story 4. Oh, my poor job.
I can't today. I have to go see Toy Story 4. No, I mean, I don't mean it like that. I'm just saying this, like, my point was, if it wasn't that it was a Disney film and I was covering it for Laughing Place, I don't think I would go see it in theaters unless I heard some really amazing things, and certainly not opening weekend.
But isn't that the big unless of anything? These movies are all...
Right. I mean, DreamWorks is making their third Dragons film, and I slept through the second, but the critical consensus so far has been astounding, so I'm probably going to go see the third Dragons film.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, we go with fresh hit, fresh miss... But it's something, you know, there's very few misses that are 98%.
Right.
So, you know, if something gets 98%, unless it's, you know, some weird esoteric thing, like people go like, oh, yeah, I heard that's really good. And it makes it, you know, moves it from an average film to a, you know, successful film.
Mm-hmm.
But so I got one more prediction I want from you guys.
Uh-oh.
And this is going to be a hard one to qualify, but. Or quantify even. But I feel like we would know it when it happens. Do we predict Star Wars Galaxy's Edge will be a hit or miss?
Oh. Well, how do you, how do you?
So basically, I think what he's saying, do you think it's going to be Hogsmeade in Orlando or Hogsmeade in Hollywood?
I think it's going to be Hogsmeade in Orlando, but I've vocalized my concerns many, many times that I think they've got such a huge issue on their hands, or are going to have a huge issue on their hands getting people to leave the land.
Yeah, and I was talking to Joe Rohde the other day, and he brought up something that I've never heard someone say, but when he said it, I'm like, absolutely. And this is the problem with the Harry Potter attractions. In rides, ride-through attractions, you can't have plot twists. And what happens is a lot of the people, particularly in these movie-based attractions, is they're wannabe filmmakers, and they put in plot twists, which are fine in a movie, but when you're flying all over the place, literally or figuratively, the plot, having a plot twist just, it doesn't read. And I think, like Flight of Passage, you don't know where you're going to go. You don't know all the adventures, but it's not like suddenly you get zapped into another world or something like that. And I'm curious.
Voldemort doesn't just show up and start like casting spells at you.
Yeah, because I mean, people are screaming. You're distracted by all these hundreds of different things. It's not like a movie where you have a single point of focus, which is a place on a screen. So, I'm curious to see, quite frankly, if the Star Wars attractions will have plot twists. I mean, there's the typical something goes terribly wrong. I don't qualify that as a plot twist, but
I
what
mean,
ha what goes terribly wrong can't be. You just have to know something goes wrong, and that's all that really matters. Rex flying you the wrong way, I think that reads. But if he's go if it starts getting a little bit more complicated than that, I just don't think those things work.
there's a difference between surprises and plot twists.
Right.
No, I mean, I've always kind of felt like the Millennium Falcon one, feels more or sounds. It sounds more like a video game, like a really immersive video game experience than anything with a simulator element. The Battle of the Resistance, I've always kind of visualized it as being on a Spider-Man-esque level. Not that I think it's going to be like the same ride system, but like that kind of pacing is kind of my expectation. I think I don't think there's any way that the land isn't a hit in terms of driving guests to both Disneyland and Disney World. I think that there will be a high volume of guests who grow frustrated with it due to overcrowding.
Yeah, I don't know that's fair. I mean, that's not really the point. I mean, we expect that, right?
Well, yeah,
But
you expect it when it's new. I think it's going to persist like indefinitely, that it'll always have this problem, that it'll kind of become the area of Hollywood studios where if you I'm not going back because I can't stand the level of geekery with the people. And I don't know why. I mean, I love Star Wars, don't get me wrong. But there's something about the level to which Star Wars fans take it that is more off-putting to me than the diehard level that Harry Potter fans take it. I don't get as annoyed seeing Harry Potter fans wearing Hogwarts robes as I do seeing like a convention hall of Star Wars fans pretending to be various alien races.
yeah, I don't, I find them all annoying. Even
I mean,
Disney fans.
it is
But
all a little annoying,
I
but.
mean, the key is balance to me, right?
Yeah.
It's you can have fun with it. We can all play along. I don't mind people dressing up. But it's when you take it to a level when it needs to stop.
I'm curious with the Disney costume policy how they're going to enforce that, because there was the infamous Linda Skywalker, who was never told she can't come in because she's in costume, and for Star Wars universe, I mean, a lot of it could be perceived as just style, like, oh, I'm wearing earth tone cargo pants, an earth tone shirt, an earthy toned vest, and
Then don't go to Evermore would be my advice to you.
I want to see it once. Like I would probably go for I don't know if they're going to do like a fun like spring festival. The Halloween version of Evermore sounds uncomfortable to me.
Well, I'm not trying to knock Evermore at all. I like Evermore. Please don't misunderstand. But there are some of the guests at Evermore, and I went on a closing night, so maybe that might not be the best time. But some of the guests there, and it's just because it leads itself to role playing, which is part of its conceit. But then there's a time when that needs to stop, and you need to let me use the bathroom without talking to me.
But that's very much the conceit of Galaxy's Edge.
Well, but I don't know how that's going to be when it's actually executed.
Yeah, I mean
I mean, you know,
it's weird that
they
it's
always talk
executed
these
through
big
your phone
things.
in many ways,
Yeah.
and I like Mike's article about like not wanting to have his phone out and necessary for the immersive theme park experience that they've built. But I mean I think it's going to be like Disneyland on a crowded SoCal AP non-blockout weekend, where it's just like every single table is taken and no one's actually eating, but they're just sitting and absorbing everything. And so you, as a guest who decided to pick your lunch spot in Galaxy's Edge, can't actually get a table. Like, those are the kinds of things I worry will happen.
Yeah,
And
well, I'm sure they will.
I haven't been back to Universal Orlando in a good while, but like Hogsmeade had that overhang under the owlery where they were just like picnic table seating, and you would go on like a weekend and it was just people in robes sprawling out just hanging
Yeah, but
like
I
so
like
they
that
can
because they had this area where those people could do that
But do you
away
think
from the main
Galaxy's
thrust.
Edge with how limited spaces at Disneyland and Hollywood Studios, do you think these lands have that kind of space laid
Well, I have no idea. I mean, they're 14 acres. I don't want to make it sound like they're small, but I don't know what they're using it for. I mean,
mean, I imagine that the big attraction being not screens is going to take up a ton of space. I picture it as being like on the same size or bigger than the show building for Great Movie Ride, which was massive.
yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do I know? But and I purposely don't know. It's not, I don't want to know too
Yeah.
much,
I mean, just
but
looking at
I
the
mean, we'll know when we get,
models.
we'll know there soon enough.
I mean, the model was huge, but just looking at the models compared to what you can see of the land, it looks like the actual amount of guest traffic walking space is done, says the space for the attractions is huge.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I obviously the one attraction's really big, the Rise of the Resistance.
Right.
But I don't know, and I imagine the Millennium Falcon attractions, I mean, it might not be as tall, but if they're having that much throughput, there's got to be enough pods, so to speak. But I don't know. The Harry Potter land is not that big either. Just the way they used it. I mean, they took all those spaces that should be stores, and just left all to the side there for that little picnic area. And the one thing about Disneyland too is. At Universal, that's the only place like that at Universal where you can just sort of chill. Whereas at Disneyland, just take the pathway to, if you're Hungry Bear and can chill out there if you need to chill. I mean, I don't know about access control and all that, but at some point, Galaxy's Edge will just be two really long waits, and I mean, just like Pandora, you don't need, we don't need to wait to get into Pandora anymore. You didn't have to wait to get into Pandora, couple days after opening. It might take Star Galaxy's Edge a little bit longer, but
But
I bet if you go.
Pandora as a layout is very different from really any other theme park land because, it's meant to be these it is these windy paths that lead to a lot of photo ops, and you're kind of taking in the natural beauty. But the level of fandom for Avatar, I mean, everyone was even questioning when they announced Pandora, and then even as it was being built and how much money they were spending on it, everyone was questioning why. And it's beautiful, and everybody loves it. But it's not the kind of thing where you like obsess over it. I have yet to see anybody going completely in blue to Pandora or speaking in Navi.
Yeah, I guess my, I mean, I guess I just,
But like the Star Wars fandom, there's people who like read Basic.
yeah, but well, I just don't, the basic is English, right?
I
Arubash is.
Oh, okay. Arabesque, whatever.
Yeah. But
I'm basic.
yeah, I mean, it's just hard to tell. I mean, I mean, there's those people who are like, it's going to bring in 200,000 people on opening day. It's not. Because Disneyland can't hold 200,000 people.
I was going to
But
say, where would
you
you
know,
go?
and I mean, I also wouldn't jump to some fast conclusion on opening day or even opening month, but you know, come September, I mean, that's when you're really going to see the long-term through line there. You know, as much as Star Wars fans are passionate, you know, Star Tours isn't crazy every day, and Harry
No, but
Potter's
it
not crazy every
was
day.
when Star Tours converted to the random experiences. It was
Yeah,
crazy for a while.
but for, you know, for 6 months. I mean, this is not a year-long project, right? This is, you know, this is something that's going to go, you know, become just part of Disneyland. Like Mission Breakout. I mean, I was looking the other day, it had a 15-minute wait. And Marvel fans, you know, it's different than Star Wars fans, but you know, it's the one Marvel ride in the United States. So, you know, I think it will always be busy. But at some point, just by the nature of how many people go to Disneyland on any given day, it's going to even out because as much as there's going to be Star Wars fans that are driven, the vast majority of people who go to Disneyland are going to just have it as part of their Disney experience. Because there's far more Disneyland fans than there are Star Wars fans.
That's true.
I don't know that the Lion King Festival happening to DCA is going to have a significant draw from as counter programming. I'm not quite sure what they're trying to do there.
Do you think it will be like the same thing they're doing in Animal Kingdom?
I don't know. It seems a little bit more focused on the new movie,
Okay.
as the Lion King is sort of a the Animal Kingdom is sort of a celebration of the original release. But I don't know. I mean, it just seems like what they're going to do at DCA this summer.
They also didn't really
And then,
announce a whole lot.
yeah. And also, you know, the one thing too also is next year, supposedly, there'll be more Marvel at the park. So at DCA. So that's going to naturally sort of balance everything out. Not 100%, but the hardest part is just there are all these projects just going to make the whole Disney infrastructure unbearable. But that's a topic for another time. So where are we at, Kyle? Are we at 90 minutes yet?
Yep, just about.
Okay. Well, so let's go around the table, proverbial table, and see if anyone's got anything they want to address before we wrap this baby up. Alex?
I recently saw Alita Battle Angel from Fox, and I do not recommend.
Where's this stand on the RT these days?
I haven't even, let me look. Gave it 1 out of 5 bars
Well, that
of
was like the
street chocolate.
second 1 out of 5 in a week from you.
What else did I 1 out of 5?
Pearl.
Oh, Pearl. Yeah, girl. Girl Pearl.
Iger was proud of it. He said so on Twitter.
I mean, I would, I will say the message behind Pearl, I'm totally behind. The execution is not there, as far as I'm concerned. But when
Alex
I
doesn't
looked
like
at
swearing
YouTube,
in Pixar movies.
I really don't. It really bothers me. But when I looked on YouTube, like the number of likes were, or the number of thumbs downs were low compared to what I expected, at least what I would have ranked it. But when I looked at the comments, it was a lot of people and complaining about the swearing, and the first one had like over 500 like likes on that comment. Alita is up from where it was. It's now at 57% rotten. At one point it was in the 30s. It's bad, y'all.
The critics consensus, Alita Battle Angel's story struggles to keep up with its special effects, but fans of futuristic sci-fi action may still find themselves more than sufficiently entertained.
No, it's bad.
Well, I'll go see the Lego Movie 2 instead. That's at 90%.
Ooh.
Where's Mary Poppins in the top five? Oh, it's already gone.
Kid Who Would Be King, everyone slept on.
That's actually fresh.
It's fresh, it's good, and nobody's ruined
88%.
it yet. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Okay, Kyle, you got anything?
I'm a little conflicted because I think in terms of the Oscar Best Animated Film category, I'm going with a non-Disney pick because I think Spider-Man deserves it.
Well, and Spider-Man's the like predicted winner.
Well,
I mean, it
yeah,
won the
that's not why
Emmys.
I'm going for it, but I'm just saying,
No, I'm
like
just,
I think if I'm
yeah,
being honest with
that's.
myself, I think it was my favorite.
I
I
would
just feel like
rank.
Right.
That's a half win, right? Like, what? I
Yeah.
mean, we didn't have anything to do with it, but they took our stuff.
That's true. Of the animated films nominated, Incredibles 2, I rank a little above Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but I rank Spider-Man above Ralph Breaks the Internet. And what was the fourth one?
Isle of Dogs.
I didn't even see it.
I like that one, but
Flawless.
it was okay.
I did not love
Were any of the nominees not have a Disney connection?
I think there was a fifth one. I just don't
Yeah,
remember what it
seems like.
is.
Grinch?
No, it's probably might be a foreign one, but I don't remember. It was very early when I wrote about them.
Mirai? Was that Studio Ghibli? Mirai?
Mirai?
Mirai.
Well, Studio Ghibli does not exist anymore.
Okay, well then no.
That Mary the Witch's Flower was a co-production that was many of Studio Ghibli's talent kind of repurposed
So
into Studio Pinocchio.
four out of five are somehow Disney connected. And the other one that I thought was fun is visual effects. So you have Avengers Infinity War, which is obviously Disney. Christopher Robin, obviously Disney. Solo, A Star Wars Story, obviously Disney. Ready Player One, whose visual effects were done by ILM. And then you have First Man, which has no Disney connection. So four out of the five nominees are essentially a Disney win.
Anyway, anything
So
from
it's
you
in the
for me?
bag.
What's that?
Is it anything from you for final thoughts?
No, just glad we did this finally. Hopefully this one makes it to the air. Someday we'll release our bonus footage, like after we figure out how to rescue it and the long lost episodes.
No, we can just
Well,
play the unsynced versions. People just have to figure out
it
what's supposed to go where.
all. Well, since Fanboy's recordings were faster than everyone else's, he'll be like talking in the future
Well, Doobie's
and
was
we'll be
worse.
reacting.
Doobie punches out like 5 minutes before the show ends on the last one.
There's just no Doobie for the ending.
He's just like, "All right, bye."
Wow.
Yeah. Like in the middle of a conversation. That's crazy.
Well,
Well,
awesome.
anyway, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for your patience if you actually hear this. And we'll talk to you soon. Have a great one, guys.
Bye.